You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. I'm here with my co-host, Jim Dwyer. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. A great summer morning, and the White Sox completed a sweep over the weekend. Too bad the Cubs couldn't help them out by beating the Tigers a couple times.
I know. Jeez, I had a root for the Cubs all weekend. It didn't do any good.
Yeah.
I don't know. One of those things. Oh, well, we'll keep plugging along.
And who said the White Sox fans don't like the Cubs? I was hoping, all hope that they would pull one of these games out.
I think they play each other, in the next 2 weeks or so?
Yep, they sure do.
I know. It's the summertime. It's a great time of the year. And we this morning are going to be talking about a couple different topics relating to public policy and the Catholic Conference, and not really so much of what's going on in Springfield per se, because the legislative session is concluded. It's been a month now already, about early May. And so at this time of the year, unless there's sort of like late breaking news of some sort, which we had last summer, it seems like over and over and over with the governor's executive orders, it gave us a lot to talk about, a lot to do. This year, it seems like maybe our focus is a little bit more in the nation's capital, in Washington, D.C., and some of the issues that have been pending there that the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops have been involved with, and also some polling data that's come out about some life issues. And Jim, before we go much further in the show, we should probably say that this is going to be, as far as we know, your last show, at least from the Archdiocese of Chicago here, because you're going to be departing us for greener pastures, or at least they'll be a little drier pastures, maybe not
yes,
greener.
Yes, I'm going to be the Chief Communications Officer for the Diocese of Phoenix. I've lived here all my life, and it's going to be a little tough moving away, but then I'm moving to an area that I had always hoped to retire to, and now I don't have to wait till I retire to get there. It seems like it's going to be a great opportunity, and I have grown a little weary of winter over, say, the last decade or so, but it's been a great experience here, and the Archdiocese has been a tremendous experience. I've worked with some of the best people I've ever worked with. Cardinal George is a terrific human being and a terrific priest and bishop and cardinal.
Absolutely.
And Jimmy Legault has done a great job leading as chancellor. So I've been very fortunate to work under the leadership of two very dynamic, decent, honorable men.
Great. And we'll talk about that a little bit more at the concluding notes of the show. And we were going to compile a list of Jim Dwyer's greatest quibs and quotes.
No, you don't.
It took more than an hour, so we decided not to do it at all. They're still making it, and it's going to take at least another couple more months before that's done. So we'll sort of say our goodbyes at the end of the show. And this morning, if you want to suggest any topics for our show, as well as comment on some of the things we're going to be talking about, we can leave the phone number at area code 312-751-1979. Jim, since our last program a month ago, what we're dealing with a lot, at least a part of my time, as well as I know there's been a lot of newspaper stories and attention, especially after Los Angeles last week, about the whole growing debate on immigration and immigration reform. At the Catholic Conference, we've actually been participating on the local level with our fellow offices at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops on trying to register the Church's position on a comprehensive immigration reform as it relates to this issue. And that actually has received some attention in the press, but also I know that last week when the bishops were out in Los Angeles, a statement was released regarding this issue. And Bishop Barnes from San Bernardino put out a statement. And I should add that for some people who may remember Bishop Kakanis, was one of the auxiliary bishops in Chicago, now is out in Tucson, Arizona, and has kind of become one of the national spokesmen on this issue as well from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Bishop Barnes from San Bernardino, Bishop Kakanis from Tucson, as well as Bishop DiMarzio from Brooklyn last week were very active in this issue. And also I know maybe some of our listeners may have read about some of Cardinal Mahoney's comments from Los Angeles about a month or two ago on the Church's position on this issue.
Well, I think one of the unfortunate aspects of that is a lot of people think that the Church is advocating lawbreaking. The Church is not advocating lawbreaking. Cardinal Mahoney just had stated his hope that mm-hmm. any legislation that was passed would not criminalize just trying to help people with decent life-saving measures, yep, and trying to help people just survive, not necessarily break the law. And he wasn't saying that we would definitely go out and break the law if that's what it came to, but he was just saying, please don't criminalize humanitarian efforts. That's what he was pleading for. And unfortunately, a lot of people took that as his way of saying, if you don't pass a law we like, we're not going to pay any attention to it. We're not going to follow the law. We're going to be criminals ourselves. And I don't think he intended that at all.
Well, we should probably back up and put this issue in context a little bit. And if you want to chime in about the immigration reform debate, the number is 312-751-1979. I think what we've seen over the last, I'll say, 12 to 18 months is growing media attention about a problem. And the problem can be defined maybe in two probably differing interpretations. One is that there's a security issue that we need to deal with in this country. We see reports from the media of those people running across the border, usually the Mexican border, into the United States, into southern Arizona or Texas, depending on where the particular pictures are coming from. So some people are viewing it strictly as a law enforcement security issue. And there's a strong sentiment out there that says that we as a society should not be rewarding in any way, shape, or form people who break the law, people who have come here illegally and have settled in the United States. We hear constantly that they don't care how long they've been in this country. We shouldn't be rewarding that behavior in any way. And they call that amnesty. That's what it's being portrayed as by some people. Others are taking the same phenomena and they're looking at people who have been in the United States for anywhere from, let's say, a couple months to maybe their whole lives, which could be 25, 30 years. And they're saying to those, and they're looking at those people and they're saying, geez, those are our neighbors. Those are our friends. Those are people that we see in restaurants and hotels predominantly. We see them doing a large variety of occupations in the United States today. And they're looking at that saying, geez, if they've been here this long, perhaps we should avoid the problem that they're currently having and provide them at least a chance or a way of becoming permanent residents, if not citizens in the United States. So what we're seeing now is sort of two different things. And then I think everybody else is somewhere in between saying, well, that's amnesty or that's a path to citizenship. And I think that's what you're alluding to when you say that people are looking at this phenomenon saying that we're awarding lawbreakers. And that's not what the church is trying to say. But I think people are looking at that same problem and looking at it different manners.
Plus, I think there's a pragmatism involved in the way the church is looking at this. And a lot of people might say, wow, the church being pragmatic. But the church is. They're saying, you have all these people here. And you said some of these people have been here for extended period of time. There's been marriages. There's been children born in this country who are American citizens. You're mm-hmm. born in this country. You're an American citizen. So what do you do? Split up the families? I mean, I don't think anybody wants to split up a family.
Right. We saw it.
No matter what your stance is on law breaking or not law breaking, then nobody wants to split up a family. And the humanitarian thing is to take a look at this. And the one thing that I've always been troubled by whenever you're dealing with any human relations problem is, and the media and legislators too and advocates are always looking for cookbook answers.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure there is a cookbook answer. You try to do a comprehensive – I think if you can get what the bishops are calling for, a comprehensive approach – that still, if you can somehow come up with a comprehensive approach that still deals with every situation individually, let's examine this family, their situation, and if it makes sense to help them legalize no matter how they got here so you can keep the family together where the children have been born here, do that. If you've got another situation where people came in here illegally and have done nothing but become a criminal element to society, then you might want to be a little tougher. But I don't think you can come up with a cookbook answer to what are very complex problems.
I think one of the simplistic solutions that we've seen advocated for in this debate is the construction of a wall along the border between the United States and Mexico. And I think some people look at that and say, well, that would enhance our security and that would prohibit additional people from coming into the country. And there's some merit to that. And there's some people that look at that same facts and say, but the fact of the matter is when we have constructed walls along certain aspects of the United States-Mexico border, we've actually seen the number of illegal entrants in the United States increase. Mm-hmm. So the data there is open to interpretation, but it makes some people feel better to construct a wall, and it looks like Congress is going to be doing at least part of that in some of the bills that they've been talked about. And after the break, we'll talk a little bit about the House bill and the Senate bill and the differences between the two approaches. With that, I want to talk a little bit more about the wall, about the immigration reform issue. And Jim, this will be a good segue into your new job in Arizona, because you're going to be dealing with this issue a lot.
Oh, yes.
So we're just trying to get you ready for your new
your
new position, answering questions about the immigration reform issue. The number here is area code 312-751-1979. And we'll be back in about 1 minute, they're telling me.
Living a Christian life in a secular world is a challenge. The Young Adult Ministry Office invites all young adults to meet that challenge with Theology on Tap, a summer speaker and discussion series. Theology on Tap connects people college age and in their 20s and 30s, married and single, for great, faith-filled conversation. Theology on Tap has been serving up the finest in speakers, conversation, and theology for over 25 years, addressing key elements in our Catholic faith. Topics include spirituality, sexuality, social justice, and service. We'll discuss prayer, the Mass, sacraments, grace, even how the Gospels were actually written. Join us for Theology on Tap, July 9th through August 6th at 40 parishes and colleges throughout the Chicagoland area. For details, visit www.yamchicago.org. That's www.yamchicago.org.
It's time to register for the annual Archbishop James Patterson Light Conference scheduled for July 6th to the 9th at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Hotel in Chicago.
It's a wonderful conference. It provides a culturally rich atmosphere that includes music, art, and ritual that will help participants enrich worship services in their own parishes.
The conference promotes healthy dialogue involving the African-American community and the Catholic Church. It inspires our youth, both spiritually and culturally, to share their time and talents in fostering Christian values.
And for those of you who want to share the joy of liturgical music, please join us the day before the Light Conference on July 5th for the Father Clarence Rivers Music Institute. Musicians share their gifts and expertise.
Indeed, it's a wonderful experience. So get on board and register. Go to www.likeconference.com. Like is spelled L-Y-K-E. That's www.likeconference.com. Get inspired at the Like Conference.
Welcome back. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois with my co-host Jim Dwyer. This morning we're talking a little bit about some of the national issues that we've been addressing. Most specifically, we're focused on immigration reform for the first part of our show here this morning. And Jim, before the break, we were talking about how different individuals view this whole, if you will, quote-unquote problem, and they're espousing different solutions to the immigration reform debate. And we were talking about the construction of a wall along the U.S.-Mexican border. And that is in largely response to some people who feel that that's a response to the problem of potential terrorist attacks. And that is a legitimate fear in the United States today. I think we've seen stories in the media over the weekend about, you know, possible plots in terms of terrorist activities. But also, I think a lot of people look at this debate as well, and they look at we have more than one border. We have more than the southern border. We have the northern border as well as the two coasts and how we protect ourselves. But I think what the bishops are trying to say and what our church is saying is that, as you were alluding to earlier, it has to be sort of a comprehensive approach to the problem. How we go about espousing that thing will be interesting. And I know there's certain segments of our society, you know, we were talking at the break about some of the people along the Arizona Mexican border and per se who are the Minutemen uh-huh. who are talking about how to solve this problem.
Yeah, they're sort of like a quasi vigilante group, although I'm sure they would not go along with that characterization, because they claim that they've done very humanitarian things, and I haven't been there. I've seen the news reports, and the news reports have been, quite frankly, rather balanced. Some have shown them mm-hmm. actually helping some immigrants out, giving them water, and then suggesting they go back over the border and watching them as they go back over, only to probably come back in a couple of days. The sad thing about this is that most of the information people get is from the media on this. And my biggest disappointment with the media, which I've been part of my whole life, I was a newspaper reporter. I was managing editor of a newspaper in the suburban area of Chicago, is the lack of context. I mean, if you step back and look at this in a broader context, immigration, in some sense or another, has been a problem since the country was formed. I mean, you go back to when the Italians came and the Polish people came and the Irish people came. There was always some kind of discrimination against them.
Sure.
And then they've eventually assimilated.
Right.
Then after a couple generations, they assimilate, and there's this – I don't know how to put it, almost like we went through it. You've got to go through the same thing we mm-hmm. went through, even if it doesn't make sense anymore.
Yep.
And I think that fuels part of it. You got – there's so many different factors here. You have the security factor.
Right.
That is a legitimate problem. But some people point out, okay, if you're going to build a wall from Mexico to the United States, why not Canada? Because it's a longer border.
Right. Exactly.
So if Al-Qaeda wants to come in, they could come in from a whole variety of different angles. And there are some people who say, let's face it, if somebody's really committed – to committing a terrorist act here, mm-hmm. it's going to be pretty hard to stop all of them.
Yeah.
And I would submit that we don't know how many terrorist attacks have been foiled since 9/11 and before 9/11 by administrations, both Democratic and Republican, because they're not going to say that. They don't want to panic people. But I would say, and this has always troubled me, no matter what your political leaning is, there isn't a president of either party in this country who'd ever want to be in office and watch this country blow up. So I think people need to understand that everybody's, at least from a motivational standpoint, is trying to do the right thing. It's how do you do it? How do you do it in a way that makes sense? Then you have the other factor, which I think is the more important factor dealing with Mexico. Mexico's economy is so poor, and that's sad because mm-hmm. it's a great country.
Right.
If anybody's ever traveled there, and I have many times, they're wonderful people. They're among the hardest working people I've ever seen in my life. They're tremendous, and some of them – I've been to a resort in Mexico where the people spoke better English than I do. Mm-hmm. and I just thought they're just wonderful, well-educated, decent people who just – many of them just want to come here and have a better life because they're not going to get it where they're at.
Yeah. And I think that's the other dimension. This is it a problem or is it an opportunity? And we talk about the numbers of foreign-born people in the United States today versus the heyday of the immigration era, which was like in about the 1950-1920 era. And if you look at the percentage of foreign-born people in the country today, it's actually less than it was at that point in time. And I think what you said is a key point, which is assimilation. And to what degree do people start assimilating, and when and how? And I think some people look at some of the immigrants coming into the United States and say they're not assimilating fast enough, or they're not using the English language in a fast enough rate as maybe some of us would like them to. But then on the other hand, if you take a step back, as you said, and you look at the statistics, I think it indicates that they do assimilate on or about the same rate as perhaps your ancestors from – and my ancestors did back in the 1800s or early 1900s. Is that happening fast enough and soon enough? Who knows? But I think what you said is an interesting point, and I think we need to talk about this further after the break, is that the disparaging economies, the difference in the two economic engines between the United States and Mexico, is something that perhaps I don't think in our lifetime we're going to see end that quickly. I don't see in the near future the economic engine of the United States being turned off. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, due to perhaps Mexico's lack of democracy or maybe their economic opportunities, I don't think you're going to see them grow at a fast enough rate as we are going to. So therefore, you're going to continually have people who are going to be search of a better opportunity. And that's all they're looking for, I believe, is what you said earlier. They're looking for a better opportunity, and they're going to keep coming here. So a question for us is, how are we going to deal with that problem over the – not only the short term, but the long term?
The exchange rate in money is always stunned me. I think a dollar here is worth about 10 in Mexico, something like that. It's always been around 9 to 11 since I've been traveling down there. And they can come up here and make what we consider a pittance and go down there and live much better and support their families mm-hmm. much better than they would up here. And I think another thing that's kind of helped the situation is I think, you know, a lot of this immigration debate is kind of cooled a little bit. It's not as hot, as heavy as it might have been at another time, because unemployment in this country right now is about as low as it's ever been. I think the war in Iraq and some other dissatisfaction with the Bush administration has diverted people's attention away from that. But the fact that unemployment is about 4.7%, which is pretty close to full employment, our economy is going very strong. Had it not been going this strong, there'd be a lot of people who would be using the immigrants as a scapegoat for poor economic figures, which fortunately we don't have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Our economy does seem to be utilizing these people who are coming in. And not only that, but it seems like we need more, especially on those sort of lower level service sector jobs.
And it's not hurting the rest of us. It really isn't. I mean, if somebody really wants to find a job, they can find a job right now.
Absolutely. We're being told we're going to take a break, and we'll do so at this point in time. We're looking for your input as well, and your comments and your conversations, and we're going to continue discussing the immigration reform issue after the break comes up. Once again, the phone number is area code 312-751-1979, and we'll be back after this 1 minute break, or maybe it'll be two.
It's not too early to register your pre-K children for next fall in one of the excellent Catholic elementary schools in Chicago and the suburbs. Registration is open for 3- and 4-year-old pre-K children, as well as kindergarten through 8th grade student transfers. Perhaps you heard the impressive numbers, test scores above national standards, a 19-to-1 student-teacher ratio, and a 97% attendance rate. Catholic school students go on to successful high school and college experiences and become the leaders of tomorrow. Go to the Catholic school of your choice for more information, or go online and visit the school's webpage at www.archchicago.org. That's www.archchicago.org. Catholic schools, where faith and education meet.
Each year in Chicago, 3,000 children are reported sexually abused. The Chicago Children's Advocacy Center restores the trust that was once lost. It's a place where professionals come together under one roof and abused children tell their stories. A place where they can get help immediately. Support the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. For more information or to help, call 1-877-703-HOPE or visit chicagocac.org.
Most interment arrangements at the 42 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois, back with Jim Dwyer, talking about the immigration and immigration reform issue. The number, once again, to join our conversation is 312-751-1979. And Jim, one of the things we were talking about before the break was just the economics of the issue and the labor patterns, and it being defined as a labor issue as opposed to a security issue, opposed to an economic development opportunity. But, you know, one of the things maybe we would talk about now is just the differences between the House of Representatives approach and the United States Senate approach. And it's really fascinating to see that how maybe it's part of our system and the way we're set up, whereas the House being closer to the people maybe has a certain perspective, which is they're labeling it as an enforcement first or an enforcement only type of approach. And then the Senate maybe is taking a bit of a more comprehensive approach, it seems, which maybe is a little closer to perhaps what the United States bishops are saying. And I think one of the things.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Reflecting Christ's Light, and this is Nancy Polachek. Once a month, we talk about some of the things that are happening in the Archdiocese and specific to the Strategic Pastoral Plan. So hope our listeners know that this year is the year of strong Catholic parents. So our show today is going to talk about how parents and children sometimes come together in parishes for what people might call religious education, but faith formation. So I'm joined today by three very talented women, Claire, Carrie, and Mary Jane. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad that you're with me. You are from very different areas of the Archdiocese, but you all have a couple of things in common. You're all directors of religious education in your parish. And so what I'd like our listeners to know is a little bit about each of the parishes that we're talking about today, because there are some differences, yet you're doing programming that is somewhat similar. So, Claire, you're from St. Paul the Apostle.
Correct.
Maybe you can just give us a short little summary of what your parish is like.
Of course. We're located in Gurnee. We're an archdiocesan parish, but we're staffed by Carmelite fathers. The Carmelite charism is contemplative prayer, so that really infuses our parish. It's very prayerful. Our program itself has 1,500 students, 900 families. We're a kindergarten through a senior and high school program. We do not have a school, so we do not have a school building. So we call our program Family Spiritual Formation because that's what we hope it is, not just education, but really forming students and their parents to have spiritual lives, and in the Catholic tradition, of course. And
Well, Claire, first of all, I just have to stop you. I'm impressed. 1,500 kids. You can't be doing this by yourself. Do you have a staff? Are there other people that work with you in faith formation for families?
Of course. We have a wonderful staff. Amy Russell is our kindergarten through fifth grade coordinator. She works with those catechists and helps them with lesson planning and program planning. Laura Oslovich is our sixth through eighth grade coordinator. She works, takes them from the Old Testament through confirmation. Our youth minister is Michelle Schaefer. She's 9th through 12th grade. And we have a wonderful administrative coordinator, Carla Pearson.
So that's
all of us, through 12.
K through 12, 1,500 kids. Carrie, I don't think your program is that big at St. Mary's in Evanston.
No.
But it's just as dynamic. So tell us a little bit about St. Mary's.
Well, as you said, we're in Evanston, so we kind of, we're right on the border of Chicago, so we have a little bit of an urban feel more than suburban here, and we're a lot smaller. We only have 850 families in the parish. We have, we do have a parish school, which we share with St. Nicholas here in Evanston, and the school is physically on their property, so our former school building here at St. Mary's is rented out as a child care center, and we use it on Sunday mornings for our religious ed program.
And do you have, does St. Nicholas also have a religious ed program, or do those students come to you?
No, St. Nicholas has their own religious ed program.
Mm-hmm.
But so what we do is Sister Christina at St. Nicholas takes her children through religious ed. Separately, I take mine religious ed families over here at St. Mary's. But children from both parishes are in the school. So the children who are in families that are St. Mary's students join us for sacramental prep, and the St. Nicholas Children joined Sister Christina's RE program for sacramental prep.
Well, you must be a great organizer, because that sounds very complicated to me.
It does get a little bit.
Yeah, and I guess on those first days when everybody's trying to think, okay, am I first grader in what parish and what room? And
exactly,
oh my,
yeah, and we have to coordinate the dates of our sacraments. So yeah. In previous years, the children were making the, especially their first communion, was a little bit separated. So the second, you'd have second graders who could go to communion at school masses if they were from St. Nick's, and kids who couldn't go to first communion yet. So we have to coordinate all of that so that they kind of come together for all the kids.
You are definitely an organizer. So I'm glad you're with us. And our third guest, Mary Jane, you're from St. Anne's in Barrington. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your program, the size and the makeup?
Sure. We are in the northwest suburbs, kind of at the edge of the Archdiocese, and we have over 3,000 families in the parish, over 1,000 people taking advantage of our various faith formation programs. Our department, we call it GIFT, Growing in Faith Together, and we have a lovely woman by the name of Sue Jett, who is our Associate Director of Children's Faith Formation, and she handles grades 1 through 5 programming, as well as middle school programming, and First Reconciliation and First Eucharist preparation. Michael Hugo is our youth minister, and he handles confirmation preparation. We confirm in high school here. And then we have two pastoral associates, Sister Loretta and Sister Anna Marie, and they handle some of the adult programming as well as our CIA. And then I handle some other adult programming and our intergenerational program.
Wow. That's a lot going on in your parish, too. Well, like I had said, that you're from different areas of the Archdiocese. Your parishes have a little bit of a different makeup. But the one thing that you have in common that really piqued my interest was something called family catechesis, or some people say intergenerational catechesis. I understand that to be people from many different ages growing in faith together. So it could be grandparents, parents, seniors, empty nesters, children, people from all different areas coming together. And yet, even though you each have a program that's considered intergenerational, each one of you takes that intergenerational idea to a very specific format. So that's the other thing that I think we're going to just have to go back around one more time. I hope you don't mind. And just really quick, give me kind of the very basic description of what is the intergenerational programming that you do at your parish. And why don't we just go back to Claire again. So Claire, over at St. Paul, what do you do that's intergenerational?
Briefly?
Yeah,
we have at each grade level one activity a year in which we engage both our parents and our students in some type of experience that we hope will live with them. It can be social, it can be service-oriented, or sacramental.
Great. Well, you know what? We're going to come back and talk more about the details of how this actually looks in each parish. But thanks for that really brief summary. We're going to have to come back after a station break and get to our other parishes. Hold on.
Thank you.
Are there engaged couples in your parish who are separated by distance because of the military, work, or other situations? These couples may find it difficult to fulfill the marriage preparation requirements. Now there is a way to prepare these couples through an online Catholic marriage prep class found at the Marriage Ministries website, marriageministries.com. Couples watch videos, answer questions that require reflection, and talk about each section over Skype at their own pace. The course is incredibly convenient and easy to use and is now also offered in Spanish. So check out this valuable resource that will help couples strengthen their relationship, catechize them in the Catholic faith, and help them deepen their commitment to the sacrament they are about to receive. Go to marriageministries.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Reflecting Christ's Light, and this is Nancy Palachek. We have a really interesting development going on in some parishes where it's not just catechesis for children anymore. It's catechesis for the whole family, and oftentimes the whole family comes together. So our guests today are Claire from St. Paul the Apostle, Carrie from St. Mary's in Evanston, and Mary Jane from St. Anne in Barrington. So we've already heard a little bit about how Claire and St. Paul has family events at every grade level. But Carrie, the way you do intergenerational faith formation at St. Mary's is very different. So give us a quick understanding of what happens in your parish.
Sure. We come together four times a year in the religious ed program with parents and their children. We've done one day on Mary, one day in Advent. We'll continue with two more before the end of the year. And so the whole family gathers for that, and that's open to the parish. And occasionally we do get some other members of the parish who come over to join us. And then we do intergenerational things for reconciliation, for First Communion, and for confirmation, workshops where parents and teens come together, sponsors and teens, and in the First Reconciliation, First Eucharist program, we have mornings of reflections where the parents and the whole rest of the family, older mm-hmm. brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, anybody can come along with the children.
So
for
you
those
call
mornings.
These you call these family days?
We do, family days. Okay. And so we pick a topic, and sometimes the kids go with the families. The parents all stay together for the activities, and in some of them, we break out in age groups, so the parents may go one way and children of different ages go one way for part of it.
And a family day event would be considered a class time for
it
children
is
in your program.
Correct. It's okay. Still a class day. It happens on Sunday morning in the regular class period, and we do take attendance, and all the families participate like they would on any Sunday. There will always be an occasional absence. But.
Yeah, yeah. And oh, Mary Jane, so Claire is doing something at a grade level. Carrie's doing something that is for families but includes the whole parish. How do you create intergenerational faith formation at your parish?
We do a little bit of both. From a community standpoint, we have what we call our community events, which are sound similar to family days.
Uh-huh.
However, they are always marketed to the whole parish. It's not confined to people who are, say, only participating in religious ed. We have families who participate in our community events who do not participate, for whatever reason, in religious ed, and vice versa. So it's not a requirement in that way. We gather for those six times a year, and we start off with a meal. And then we break out either by age groups or keep all the ages together. We also, in trying to infuse this feeling of family togetherness and families learning together, in our younger grades with our First Reconciliation and First Eucharist preparation, we have family retreats.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's come back to that family retreat idea because that really intrigues me. But let me just ask, so community events that you have for mm-hmm. families in the program and others in the parish are invited, is that considered class time? So is it set up so that it fulfills a class requirement?
It is set up as one of the weeks, yes,
okay.
Each of those 6 weeks. And when we do those, the weeks that we're doing those, which this week happens to be one of those weeks, we are not then holding age-based classes at any of the age groups.
Thanks for taking the time, knowing that this week you're going to have one of these big major events with hundreds of people. What's the theme this week?
The theme this week is relationship with God.
Okay. So I'm sure that will include some prayer or, I don't know. I don't know exactly what it will include. Maybe I should stop by and
and that would be great. We're actually going to be talking about some of the things in our lives that can hurt our relationship with God and how we can maintain that good relationship.
Nice. So, Claire, you've heard that Carrie does some things that includes the whole parish, and Mary Jane is doing some of that. But your program is really limited by space and days. You've got 1,500 kids.
Right.
So when you do an event, it really is specifically for a family who has a child in a particular grade level. Is that correct?
Correct.
So what are some of the things that have happened at different grade levels in your parish?
Well, we I should explain, because our building's small, we don't have a school. We have a cycle of 8 classes in one meeting time. So if we were to hope to have everybody doing the same thing, we would have to do it 8 different times.
Oh, I see.
So we do it by grade level, as you said. For instance, in first grade, we have a first grade potluck. We invite all the families to come to Mass, because that's the central time, 9 uh-huh. o'clock Mass,
mm-hmm.
and then just bring a dish to share. We have a card on the table with questions, because, again, it's a large group. And so much of what we do, we try to center on the baptismal notion. Why are you bringing this child to the church?
What are you asking
from the church for your child?
Yeah.
Because we need parent buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to ask those kind of questions starting in first grade. In second grade, of course, we have a parent-child retreat around the notion of Eucharist, and there are different stations with different activities that involve both parents and children. And we ask that to be just a time for the second grade student and the parent.
Well, what I love about this whole idea is that there's role modeling going on at many different levels.
Right.
That the catechist or whoever is the facilitator for an event is kind of modeling the words to use or the prayers or whatever for the parents. Parents are modeling for each other, but parents are also modeling for the children, where the children are modeling for each other. So, you know, sometimes a child might feel a little awkward in a conversation if this isn't happening on a regular basis. But his friends, he sees his friends really engaged in the conversation with their parents. So it just builds to me like this, like a sense of connection between the parents, between the parish, between the community.
I think it's just
great. So, Mary Jane and Carrie, are you finding that you can make these connections for parents, or they make them automatically themselves?
I think very definitely here at St. Mary's that happens. Parents, as you say, model for one another. For those parents who are not as plugged into church life, they see parents who are very active and who know all the prayers and who pray at home and who, you know, so they see that modeling amongst their own peers as opposed to just me mm-hmm. or the catechist telling them they should be doing this. They see that modeling. But what I find the most transformative is the wisdom that you see from the children up.
Oh.
That when the children have insight, and they have amazing insight, often more deep than the parents will express.
You know, that's a different twist on intergenerational learning,
right?
That it's not just parents teaching children, but it's children teaching parents or guiding parents.
Right, and for the rest of the parish, for those times that we do have people from the parish at large coming, for them to hear that children have something to say, that it isn't just about us imparting our wisdom to them, that they have something to say right here, right now, at age 5 or 6 or 14 or 15.
Yeah. Mary Jane, are you getting some good responses from parents for having these kinds of sessions?
We are. When I talk to the parents who do come on a regular basis to our community events and some of our other things, they absolutely echo everything that you've just said with respect to the role modeling and the opportunity for that family time in that kind of a way, and the opportunity to start those kinds of conversations. with their children.
Great. Well, okay, we're going to have to take a break, but we're going to come back with maybe some advice to parishes and some of the challenges of this kind of faith formation. So hang on and stay with us.
That's the sound I love to hear, the sound of happy children in a Catholic school. Wouldn't you want every child to be able to attend a Catholic school? Well, that's my dream. I want every child who wants to attend a Catholic school to be able to do so. Hi, this is Sister Mary Paul McCaughey, Superintendent of Chicago Catholic Schools, and I've been working in Catholic schools since I was 19 years old because I really want to teach who Christ is. Over the next 3 years, you can support our efforts to teach who Christ is with your prayers and your generous financial support. Together, we will ensure that the Catholic schools, which are the best schools in America, will be open and available for all families who wish to send their children.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Please help us in our efforts to teach who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
For more information on this campaign for Catholic education and faith formation, visit toteachwhochristis.org.
I want to know who Christ is.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future.
120 years later, the Catholic New World is bolder and better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization.
Look for our new e-edition at CatholicNewWorld.com. Easy access, simple to use, searchable and shareable, and free for a limited time. While you're there, subscribe or call 312-534-7777.
Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back. You're listening to Reflecting Christ's Light, and today we're talking about ways that parishes have parents and children, people of different ages, different generations, coming together to learn about their faith. So Claire, Carrie, and Mary Jane, you're from different parishes. You all do something that is kind of similar, getting parents and children together. What's the challenge to doing intergenerational catechesis? Who's going to go first?
This is Mary Jane. I can tell you a couple things.
Sure.
One, certainly time availability to families. There are so many activities that everyone is involved in, but especially the children, that we see it difficult even for people to manage those schedules, much less fitting in extra things.
Yeah.
So that is one of the things. And then within our own program, when we have the families do come, from a preference standpoint, the parents prefer to be with their own age group and have a little more depth of discussion. But when we talk to the kids, they want to be with their parents. that's why we've tried to create some opportunities for both.
Yeah, so you have to mix it up a little bit. Carrie and Claire, do you have a challenge or maybe even a benefit for having intergenerational faith formation?
Well, this is Carrie at St. Mary's in Evanston. I would echo that challenge of trying to find enough depth for the adults and still satisfy that need for the children to want to be with their parents. Here, I think we've met that challenge. We try to do things that even though they are together, we do split them occasionally or for part of the event so that parents can go a little deeper. We try to send home further reading, and a video they can watch, go to this email, or this website, see something more for the parents. That would be one of those challenges. But the benefits, I think, far outweigh any challenge. everybody should give it a shot.
Thanks, Gary. Claire, what do you think? Do you have some challenges at St. Paul?
Of course we do. and you ladies are giving me so much to think about as well. First of all, I guess it's engaging the parents would be our biggest challenge. You know, we send them to you, so you'll do this. We've moved away from that. We're all learning together that no, things are better when we're all involved. And I've learned, I guess, that to de-emphasize learning in the classroom sense and more emphasize learning through experience. That's why we have service projects where the parent and child can work together. We try to have somebody there who can explain what the good is, what the attitude you're living, what church teaching is all about in terms of serving others. Sacramentally, I'm sure you all do this too, where sacraments are so deep that you can reach every level of spirituality in some very simple gestural, you know, activities or ritual activities. And as you mentioned, I'm not sure which of you mentioned it, sometimes the children grasp that rich spirituality more quickly than their parents.
Yeah.
So, that's a lesson.
Yeah. And you, in your parish, you do focus on that learning by doing,
yes,
or learning through experience. Great.
Yeah.
So if a parish has not had anything except the traditional children come to the program, parents drop them off and pick them up, we have 2 minutes. Do you have one little bit of advice for a parish to get started with intergenerational learning? Who wants to go first on that one?
I'll go first on that one. The way we began here was by starting